Greek mythology, Cronos is the son of Uranus, heaven, and Gaia, earth. Many of Cronos's brothers and sisters were monsters that Uranus buried at birth. Gaia at first mourned and then enlisted Cronos's aid to take revenge, which he did by cutting off dear old dad's dangly bits, thus separating heaven from earth and mind from body for the first time. And it's a fracture that many of us are still trying to heal in our own lives. Renegara was Cronus's youngest sister, and far from being a monster, she was so beautiful and free of spirit that her father, Uranus, fell in love with her. Gaia, in a fit of jealous rage, gave her daughter to Cronus's son, Poseidon, lord of the sea, who carried her beneath the waves. But she escaped and returned to the land of the light to reseek her freedom and beauty through relations with her father. But he could no longer consummate their love and wanted her only for a domestic to cook and tend to his drunken excesses. In sorrow, she turned away and lost herself in the depths of a far and unknown sea beyond even the reach of Poseidon. There, in solitude, she found solace for the betrayal of her spirit. Years ago, I lived and worked as a scuba instructor on the north coast of the Dominican Republic. And I'd always had the dream of scuba diving with the whales when they came down to calve on the Silver Bank some 80 miles offshore. So when I heard that there was a mad Spaniard down in the Puerto Plata harbor with a sailing ship going out to the Silver Banks to look at the whales, I went down to investigate. I found his ship and called permission to come aboard. He greeted me with all the charisma of a sea captain in a Spanish dawn. "Come aboard my ship," said Diego. "This is Renegara. And this is her brother, Cronos." Cronos was a large dog, a cross between German Shepherd and Lab, who was the ship's mascot and also caught the rats on the ship and kept the ship rat free. Diego showed me her ship, the Renegara, with pride and told me her history. She was 135 foot long, a concrete hull, twin mast, classically rigged with square rigging. She had been commissioned, I think about 80 years previously, as an icebreaker on the St. Lawrence, where she'd plied her trade for perhaps 60 years, before they finally stripped and scuttled her to the entrance of the Toronto Harbor, where she lay in the mud just below the water, acting as a water break. When Diego, who was living in Toronto at the time, working, I believe, as an electronics engineer, heard about this hull, he went to sea and talked to people and determined that he wanted her. Since they wanted to get rid of her, they sold her to him for a dollar. And he enlisted the aid of friends and working companions to gather money and energy. And he caught them up in his vision. Diego had this incredible power that he could cast a spell on you. From the moment I stepped aboard the Renegra, I felt the power of his spell, and it was a magical, you'd walk into this world of magic when you came near him. But there was something dark as well. But that's getting ahead of myself, and Jung has told us about that. Back in Toronto, his vision captured people, and they came together to make it live. They raised this ship from under the sea and completely refitted her. Below the decks, she was beautiful, gleaming mahogany varnished in all the cabins and the living area and the dining area and even the galley. As I said, the masts were solid wood and square rigged, and the steering shack had all the modern electronic gear. The only thing weak about the Renegra, as the story will show, was her machinery, both the main engine and the donkey engine used to raise the anchor. The dream was to sail her down the eastern seaboard of the United States through the Florida Keys and into the Caribbean, Bahamas, then Jamaica, Cuba, Haiti, the Dominican Republic, and on down through the Virgin Islands and finally to Barbados, and eventually sail the world to arrive in the Aegean, her mythical birthplace. And the dream flourished as she became outfitted and they sailed away south. They spent the summer in the North Caribbean and then tied up for the winter outside of Port-au-Prince. Passed the winter and in the spring rounded the northeast corner of the Dominican Republic and started sailing along the north coast. Just outside of the Puerto Plata harbor, they developed some minor engine trouble and pulled in for repairs. She never left again. The Puerto Plata harbor is like the black hole of the sailing world in that area. Cruisers pull in there for minor repairs and never leave again. Boats are tied to the dock, anchored out, some listing, some have sunk. And there's two reasons for this. The first is because the Puerto Plata harbor is a wonderful place. The island is Spanish. It's one of the Spanish Caribbean islands. It's not like the Dutch or the British or the French. There's a whole different flavor to it. This was before the tourist boom, and it was still very sleepy. The shore is lined with coconut trees, both royal palms and coconut palms. And in the evenings, the narcotic smell of the trumpet flower drifts across the land. In the morning, the cocks crow you awake, and in the evening, from the waterfront bars, merengue and salsa drift across the sky. The creak of the rigging hypnotizes you in the evening as the warm breezes blow off land, bringing all the smells of sugar cane. Mount Isabella is behind Puerto Plata, and not far up the coast is where Christopher Columbus landed for the first time. The women of the Dominican Republic are truly beautiful. They're a cross between Spanish and blacks. And they're proud and just gorgeous women. The food is cheap, the rum almost free. And you can tie up at the docks there, or could at that time, for as long as you wanted and get free water and electricity. It didn't cost anything to be there except the occasional bottle of rum to the harbor guards to take care of your ship. For all these reasons, the desire to face the rugged sea evaporated and mañana became the call. But there was a more negative reason that people got stuck in the Puerto Plata harbor. The mechanics, they were terrible, but they were extraordinarily good liars. And so someone would pull in with a minor glitch in their engine and ask a mechanic, "Can you help me?" "Of course I can help you." Not having any idea what he was doing, the man would dive in, and what had been a little problem soon is a disaster, costing thousands of dollars to repair, and many cruisers on a thin budget couldn't afford it, and they just ended up staying there, and some abandoned their boats. And so it happened with the Renegra. When I came into contact with her, she'd been there 4 months already, and Diego and his crew were running short of money. The crew, there were only three besides Kronos still with Diego. Bert was his deckhand. He just missed being retarded by a few points. Very solid. And he acted, I believe, as Diego's bodyguard as Diego got darker and darker as time went by. But Bert had this fierce loyalty to Diego. The only member of the crew more loyal was Kronos the dog. And they both saw Diego almost as a father figure. John was the cook. He had been a dealer on the New York Stock Exchange when the Renegra came through, and somehow he'd crossed paths with Diego and fallen under the spell. And I think either his ulcer or his soul was kicking up a fuss at the time and drove him out of the market. And so he joined the crew, this motley crew, and sailed off with the Renegra. And I spent hours down in the galley with John, swapping lies and drinking rum over the next year and a half. And it was actually him that got me started telling stories. One day he said, "You should be a storyteller." I didn't know there were storytellers. He said, "Oh yes, oh yes." And I was drunk enough that the seed was planted and eventually blossomed in Montreal years later. Linda was the last member of the crew and the strangest, I think. She was totally beautiful, long blonde hair, voluptuous body. I believe she had a PhD in library science and she'd been working in the Maritime somewhere. And I think had gone to a conference in Toronto and crossed paths with Diego. Their first connection was Greek mythology. They were both very interested in Greek mythology, and then she fell under his spell, threw up her job, and joined the crew raising the Renegra and sailed off around the world with this man. Physically, they were ill-matched. He was probably 55 at the time, she only 27 or 8. And his body was sagging and he was wrinkled. He had a pot belly. He seldom bathed and his teeth were rotting. So he had kind of a stench coming off of him all the time. And he always smoked, continually smoked. And as the time went by and he got darker, he drank more and more. And I believe he may have beat her on occasion. But that's in the future yet. We're still my first day on the Renegra. When Diego said, we'll be going out tomorrow, come with us. I told him I wanted to dive with the whales. And he said, of course, come with us. So in the morning, we sailed out, Renegra under full sails. It was a glorious day until we made the open sea. And it was very clear we had no business being out there because there were large swells rolling through, a big sea running, 10 or 12 feet swells. It wasn't storming there, but a distant storm had roiled the ocean. But we couldn't turn back because Diego would lose face. He didn't have any money except what we'd paid in advance. It wasn't much, $30, perhaps $40 for the whole weekend. But he had spent all that money on rum and food and diesel. And if he had turned back, he would have had to admit he couldn't refund our money. So he sailed on into these huge seas until finally, the passengers, I think there were 20 of us, some local Dominicans, a few cruisers, and other people like me working in the area. We complained bitterly, and he said, if you want to go back, we will turn around and could go back in, saving face. So we sailed back in, but square-rigged as she was, the Renegra couldn't beat up against the wind very well. And when we made the land, we were about half a mile downwind from the mouth of the harbor. We had to lower the sails and motor in. And we almost made it, just to the corner of the harbor, when the engine died. We were drifting in these huge swells back towards rocks coming out of the water, surf crashing on them. Frantically, we lowered the anchor, but by the time it hooked, we were swinging not more than 30 meters from these rocks with the surf crashing on them. Diego went below to fix the engine and came up perhaps 45 minutes with his machismo intact. We're ready to go. We fired up the engines and cruised up on top of the anchor, fired the donkey engine to raise the anchor, but it wasn't strong enough to bring up the anchor. This was the old machinery as well as the main engine. But Diego had known, and he had two long poles that we put through the capstan, and four of us drudged around in a circle like oxen in a mill, lifting this anchor under the hot sun. We almost made it into the harbor, same place where the engine had quit last time. It died again. And we drifted back, and by the time the anchor was lowered and caught, we were in the same place we'd been, swinging not more than 30 meters from these rocks with the surf crashing on them. All day long this went on. Diego called for his mechanic in town, which was really a disaster. And the mechanic came out in an inflatable Zodiac, which they tied to the stern of the Renegra. And then they worked. And over, we would pull up the anchor, almost make it to the harbor mouth. The engine would die. We'd lower the anchor. We'd drift back. We were exhausted, those of us that were walking in circles, lifting the anchor. It was determined we'd have to spend the night. Not a happy prospect, both for the danger, and everybody was seasick. Up and down on this ship all night it was going to be. People rolling back and forth across the deck, puking over this side. Rolling back and forth across the deck, puking over that side. Not a happy night. I was one of the few that didn't get sick because I had those ear patches on that you can't get anymore, but they were wonderful. In the morning, Diego announced we were ready to go, and everybody cheered to get free of this place. Let us get into the harbor. But there was one catch, he said. During the night, the painter tying the inflatable Zodiac to the stern of the Renegra had gotten tangled just a little bit around the prop, and that somebody would have to go under the ship with scuba gear to untangle it. As he said this, he looked at me. I was the only one with scuba gear other than he himself, and he said, I of course would go, but I have an ear infection. I didn't know it then, but Diego was not as impeccable about telling the truth as, for instance, I am. And so, under his spell, I said, well, I'll do it. It shouldn't take but a 5 minutes. It's just lightly tangled around the prop. Oh, yes. So I just put on my scuba gear, no wetsuit, regulator in mouth, mask on, fins on, and I was ready to go over backwards. And Diego handed me a hacksaw. Said, just in case you might need it. Seemed like a strange tool to untangle some rope, but okay. I took it and I went in. When I got under there, I realized I was insane to be there. This ship was crashing up and down 10 feet at a sweep through the water. But now my own machismo was engaged. And if I had come back out, looked up at the seasick face and said, sorry, I don't have the balls to do it. Ah, the loss of face. So down I went. When I got close and saw this huge bronze prop slashing through the water, I thought, The only thing I could do was go down and wait for the bottom of one of the sweeps and hold on so that when the Renegra went up, she would carry me with her. And I would get flat crashed up and down as well as the ship and have opportunity to untangle the rope. And that's what I did. And when I got hanging on and close, I realized that Diego had lied to me. It wasn't lightly tangled around, but rather they had tested the engine with the transmission and gear. And this rope had gotten so tangled around the prop shaft, it was melted, almost welded to the prop shaft. And I would have to use the hacksaw to cut it off bit by bit. I started to do it, and I became so focused on this task, holding on to the prop and sawing my way through, that I forgot everything else. Once I lost my grip, and the prop went up and came slashing back down inches from my head before I managed to grab onto it again. But I kept sawing. I don't know how long I was under there, a half an hour, I have no idea. But finally the shaft was cleared and I pushed away and made my way to the side of the ship to the rope ladder hanging down. But when I tried to take my gear off to climb up, I realized I was too weak to even get myself out of the water. I was totally exhausted from this intense task of cutting off this rope while getting crashed up and down through the seas. I was helped onto deck where I slumped. And everybody was staring at me, and I didn't know why, till I looked down and I saw that my whole body was completely covered with blood. That each time the Renegra had gone up and crashed down, she had bumped and rubbed me across the bottom, and it was covered with sharp barnacles. I had been completely slashed all over. But as I sat there, even then, I wasn't angry with Diego. I just felt like I'd become part of the myth. And it was only natural that my blood should soak into the deck of the Renegra and become part of her history. We made it back into the harbor, and that was the last time Renegra ever left under her own power. Months went by, and I became a regular visitor down there. After my crazy day teaching diving in the resort hotel, I would go down to relax and drink some rum, listen to the stories and the wind and the rigging. Sometimes I'd take a young tourist woman down that I was trying to woo, and she too would fall under the magic of the Renegra. But as time went by, Diego got darker and darker. It became clear that the Renegra would never sail again. Her sails were rotting, and little by little they had to sell some of the electronics gear to stay alive. Eventually they started having pork roasts on full moon nights. We'd pay $10, perhaps bring our own rum, and all feast under the full moon. It was glorious, and they'd make enough to keep them alive for the next month. But even that ended when Diego decided finally to put a bar on the deck. He built a bar so the ship truly could never sail again, and he started selling drinks to just anybody that wanted to come in and had money to pay. And he started running prostitutes in the deck and down below in the cabins below the deck. During this time, his charisma as the ship's captain had crumbled, and so this dark machismo, Spanish machismo, got stronger and stronger. He would play dominoes for 10, 12, 14 hours a day, slamming his rum bottle on the table, cracking the domino pieces down, and screaming, "Joder!" over and over, which is the generic infinitive Spanish to fuck. It was really unpleasant, and this spell that he was emanating from him was no longer light and magic, but got darker and more evil. He had great plans. He was going to turn the whole harbor into a resort area. Nothing ever came to fruition. But to hear the man talk, he was an expert on everything. I'd hear him talking to somebody about any subject you can imagine, and I think, he's a genius. But then one day, I got into conversation with him about something to do with scuba diving gas exchange laws, and I realized, although he sounded like he knew what he was saying, he had no idea what he was talking about. And I began to think that perhaps all the times he sounded like an expert in stuff I didn't know anything about, maybe he didn't know anything either. About that time, I stopped going to the Renegra. But I kept hearing rumors from down there that it was getting heavier and darker all the time. Until one day, two men came from the Virgin Islands with the plan to buy her and turn her in to a restaurant anchored by the Virgin Islands. Diego fought with this for a few days before he finally caved in. But we must remember there was something else about him. There was some true generosity of spirit. All through the hard times when he sold all the electronics gear, he never sold his ship-to-shore radio, and it was always on. No matter what time, day or night, stormy or calm, party or solitude, it was always on and one ear was always cocked. And any time he heard a sailor out on the coast, anywhere near the Puerto Plata harbor in difficulties, whether it was a local fisherman or a long-term cruiser, he would find a way to go out and rescue that person. He would find a fisherman or another sailor or go in a Zodiac. He would never leave anybody to the mercy of the seas. There was this incredible generosity to the man as well. When he signed the papers to sell the Renegra, the last tatters of his dream shattered and died. Linda, as though waking up from a 4-year sleep, packed her bags and left for Eastern Canada the next day. A few days later, John returned to New York City. Only Bert and Kronos stayed. The last time Renegra left the Puerto Plata harbor, she was under tow. Bert was on the shore. Diego promised he would be back within the week. Diego himself was on the tug. Only Kronos was on his sister's ship as they left the Puerto Plata harbor. In mid-channel, partway to the Virgin Islands, a storm blew up. And although they fought against it, eventually they had to cast her free and watch while the Renegra foundered and sank, taking Kronos the dog with her. Bert hung around for months waiting for Diego to return, but he never did, and we never heard from him again. We heard rumors that he'd gone to the Far East. Some said Africa. Others said he'd returned to his native Spain and his rich and powerful family, where he now was a businessman. But we never knew for sure. We could see this tale as a tragedy, as Diego, a rogue, that betrayed his friends, his ship, his crew. So much trust and faith and hard work, only to watch the dream thrown away as he drank more and more. Watch the last of the vision die. Watch the Renegra, so recently reborn, become a wreck once more. But I wonder, is it worth more to work breaking ice on the St. Lawrence for 60 years than to sail free for a few months in the Caribbean? And it seems to me better a watery depth and solitude in the open sea than to be bound and chained as an eatery for wealthy tourists in the Virgin Islands. Who among us would say that it's a greater tragedy to awake from a dream than to not have dreamed at all? Well, we got time for one more short one.